Welcome to the Livin' for Food Pod. I am your host, food journalist, and I don't know, many other things, Olivia Bria. This week I have a special episode because I have a 2-for-1 deal. I have the lovely sisters, Caitlin and Sarah. They are known for their blog, Walks of Life, and they are just so incredible. This was such a fun conversation. We talked about their heritage and Lunar New Year, which is currently happening. And we dug deep into their relationship as well. So this will be a super fun one. Their blog has been going on for 10 years or so now, and they have a cookbook. So we talked about that as well. So if you're looking to learn a little bit more about food this week, then this is definitely the episode to listen to. Please join me in welcoming the lovely Caitlin and Sarah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited to have both of you. I was talking to Sarah a little bit before you came on, and I was saying I don't always have two guests at the same time. You guys are only my second group. So, and sister dynamic, I have two sisters. So I'm very excited.
So, you know.
Yeah, you know.
I am smack dab in the middle of them, 4 years older, 4 years younger. So I know how it is.
The middle child, yes.
I do want to start by kind of going backwards in your journey. I obviously did my research, so don't get thrown off if like I know some weird detail, because I dig deep, okay? I know your mom grew up in China. I would guess now that your whole family is involved in the blog and everything, she turned, you know, she did a lot of home cooking and home cooked meals while you both were growing up. What was it like for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think both of our parents cooked quite a bit growing up. So my mom's background, she grew up in Shanghai. She moved to the U.S. when she was 16. So a lot of the food that she sort of brought to the table has that Shanghainese bent to it. And then our dad grew up in upstate New York. He's first generation Chinese American. And he grew up in a Cantonese family. And his father was a chef and his mother also a really great home cook. So my dad sort of brought like the Cantonese cuisine into our nightly dinners. So yeah, both of our parents cooked growing up. And for us, the experience was very much like, I mean, obviously like delicious, but I think that we took it for granted. We really took that for granted. And sort of the things that we were really itching to eat were like non-Chinese foods. We wanted like the spaghetti and meatballs. We wanted chicken pot pie. We wanted, you know, like lasagna. And I feel like that's the sort of area that Caitlin and I taught ourselves how to cook in. And our parents obviously taught us a lot of lessons too. But in terms of like experimenting with recipes and cooking ourselves, like that, like the Western food is where Caitlin and I really started. And then, you know, realizing basically after we left home, going to college, that we had no idea how to cook the foods that our parents cooked for us growing up. That was sort of the genesis of the blog.
Okay. Where did you guys go to school?
I went to Vassar in Poughkeepsie, New York.
And I went to Penn in Philadelphia.
Okay. Both really good schools. What were you guys studying at the time? Did it have anything to do with food related things or...
No. You know, it was one of those things where I feel like, I don't know, food media at the time just felt like a very TV-centric and like magazine-centric world, and it felt like hard to break into. So I don't think that either of us, like, unless you're like ready to get in front of the camera or like go on, you know, Food Network's Next Star or whatever it was called, we were not gunning for careers in food or in terms of being like classically trained chefs either. We both took pretty practical routes with our degrees, and we studied communications and marketing and psychology, and that was more our bread and butter, but it ended up being incredibly useful for what we do now, which is, you know, we're kind of constantly navigating a changing media landscape, not to sound too academic, but
I am too.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we all are.
Yeah, I get it.
We like it or not. But yeah, that's what we ended up doing, and kind of had stints in the marketing and branding world in our sort of former, our day jobs, our former day jobs. Yeah.
I also have a communications background because I originally wanted to do PR, and then, sorry to all my PR people that listen to this, I hated it. And then I realized I wanted to write instead and get into food media. But even when I started back then in school is when I kind of started writing articles for a bigger food publication. It's like changed drastically since then. And I remember I was learning everything. I was also doing social media in my internship, and it was just like everything is so 180 all the time that you just have to really kind of keep up with everything.
Totally.
Sarah, I read, this also could be a question for both of you, but I read that Sarah was, you know, growing up watching episodes of Iron Chef, Ready, Set, Cook, things like that. What or who were your culinary heroes, if any, growing up?
Caitlin and I were both watching food. I mean, it's funny that Caitlin just mentioned Food Network, because I feel like the Food Network was like sort of our, like how we consumed like food media at the time.
To be fair to the Food Network totally made us. Like,
yeah.
If we didn't have, if we weren't like sitting after school being like, oh, so that's how you roast a chicken. None of this would exist. So it was a different time at Food Network also, when there was a lot more cooking and a lot less like competing. So anyway, just want to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think that.
Circle, because you got, I was reading your or watching your Food Network feature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I think that like the Food Network was like a sort of a really nice outlet for our like just interest in food. I think that like Caitlin and I joke that when we were little, like every like cartoon or animated movie or whatever, like the most like vividly, like the most vivid scenes that we both remember are any scenes involving food. For whatever, like,
this honestly,
is, yeah, like, this is just, like, it's just, like, oh, do you remember that episode where, like, Little Bear was, like, making fish soup? You're just, like, I mean, this is.
It's, like, the episode where the teacher in Hey Arnold has the sandwich. Like, that's what we're thinking about.
No, that's, honestly, when you just said that, did you guys watch iCarly?
Yes.
Okay,
I caught the end of the iCarly wave. Sarah, am I maybe not?
Okay, maybe Sarah, yeah, maybe you're out of it. But the spaghetti tacos was such a thing. Did you remember that?
No? I don't. Now I'm showing my age. I'm like, I don't remember that part. I know broad strokes the plot, but I don't remember. But I mean, that's just like how it was. Where it was like, if it was like a food centric episode of anything, you were just like, oh, okay, like I'm extra interested today.
Okay, well, I'm giving you homework, and if
yes, I have to look up
start to finish, that's your homework.
Adding it to the queue.
Not a serious podcast.
But yeah, in terms of food heroes, I mean, I think I have like really, I think in terms of like it's sort of reflective of who was out there, right? Like who was available to us, who was represented in the media. It's like, I think of like Giada De Laurentiis, I think of Ina Garten, I think of Rachel Ray, you know, it's just like, those are the people that we grew up watching. And I think another one would probably like on the Chinese side, like pretty much the only Chinese food person that we remember watching extensively was Martin Yan. Yan Can Cook on PBS. He was PBS. Anyway. And yeah, I mean, I remember like watching that show with our dad, you know, my dad like commenting on his technique, or like, you know, he in the show, like he integrated these little like outings to Chinatown to like see like, oh, okay, like this is how a chef, like the chef in the restaurant does it. So like, I remember like being really excited to see like sort of like our food represented on TV. And also, oh, okay, Iron Chef is another, I guess, right? You're like Masaharu Morimoto, you're like Hiroyuki Sakai. Like that like was another one that I think was really more of like a fascinating watch than a food hero. You're just like, whoa. Like, I wasn't like aspiring to cook like Masaharu Morimoto, but I was like, whoa, like, look at how he's like butchering this fish or looking. So like that kind of stuff was, I guess, formative in the sense that it was just like really cool to see like Asian food represented on TV.
I also think it was a different time where it was sort of the just when we were growing up in like the 90s and the 2000s, it was kind of the beginning of like chefs being like idolized. And at the time, most of what we were taking in was just like, oh, that is incredibly functional information. I like the way this person does it. It was really more like, we were really more like studying than like idolizing anybody in particular. And each sort of like cook or chef or TV personality or like author that we were exposed to gave us something unique. And I think like it cultivated in us the sense of like, okay, we're not very precious about where we're getting this information from. Like, it can come from anywhere. And just this idea of like, oh, you know, like starting to like ingrain in us like the sense of like, oh, like we could do this, or, you know, these nuggets of information can come from anywhere, really. And I think that, you know, obviously a lot of people started to feel similarly empowered, and that was when there were a lot of food blogs coming up. And, you know, we were getting some after a while of, you know, being in the kitchen when we were like more seasoned. And when I say we were more seasoned, I mean like starting at the age of like 15 onwards, I guess. We were sort of like, okay, like we're getting some of our best information from these food blogs, actually. And, you know, much more diverse, to be honest, than what was available on network TV. So right. I think that like that all just kind of like helped mold our views on the food world. And I don't know that, I think that's why it's like, do we have quote unquote food heroes? Like, does one person stand out? Like, I would say like Anthony Bourdain comes to mind.
Oh yeah.
But he's really in his own sort of category almost. Like he was more of like a,
like his different.
Yeah. He was like a commentator of culture and society and politics and things like that. Less so. Well, that's all I'll say. But, you know, I think that there's plenty of like, I guess, like just diverse inputs to the food content and like the cooking styles that we grew up consuming.
Right. Well, I mean, you phrased this as well, but I think back then it was more focused on learning a lot of the media that we were watching because it was a bit calmer. It was a bit more about your technique. They walked you through things. Now, as I've gotten older too, everyone's very focused on their own brand, which is why the idolization continues to come.
Right.
Mm-hmm. People are right. Like, oh, Ramsay or like whoever. So I think that's a really good answer that you guys, you know, there's not one thing. And back then, I can guarantee you there was nowhere near the representation for Chinese cuisine as there is now. And, you know, I know you guys are continuing to foster that. But I would love to talk about your guys' relationship kind of growing up, just having two sisters myself and, you know, wanting to kill them half the time and actually liking them the other half of the time. What was your guys' relationship and bond growing up now that you guys work together?
I mean, you're pretty...
What a question,
you know,
Olivia.
That's pretty accurate. I feel like...
I knew it. I was like, I have to ask being my, you know, in a family with two girls.
For sure. I mean, I think that like we were really close growing up. I mean, I'll say my piece and then you can give your version.
Sarah can go first.
I think we were really close growing up. I mean, we are 2 years apart in age, but like 3 years apart school. Okay. 'Cause like I'm young for my grade and she was older in her grade.
I'm older.
Yeah. So we were pretty close in age. I think that we liked a lot of the same things and sort of aligned on a lot of the same things. And, you know, we were both like watching the same TV shows. We were both like, we basically did everything together. So I think there was like a period in our lives where It was almost like if it, like, we were of like one mind, like we would just like know all of the same references and like, you know, whatever. And then like we went off to college, we left home, went off to college, and then like became separate people. And we came like, mm-hmm. And then we realized at that point, like, oh, we're actually pretty different. And it's when we sort of like came back together and we lived together after college that we were like, oh, we're really different. So I think in terms of like the running of the blog, like now that we work together, I think that, you know, there have been like we've had our fair share of tough times, not just Caitlin and I, but like as a family, the four of us all work together with our parents. And I think it's just like, I think it's really, I mean, we've been doing this for over 10 years. So there was sort of this like, it's evolved a lot over the years. I think that all of us sort of understand like each other's triggers and like a little bit better how to communicate with each other, how to like give each other space to like do things and create our own recipes without commenting too early, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's really evolved. But yeah, I think that we still all have, just our sister relationship, we're still pretty close. I mean, we like see each other fairly often and,
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like just to give you some extra color and detail is that we basically, in a lot of ways, we are the same, I would say, just to like varying degrees. So, for example, like we're both very detail oriented mm-hmm. about different stuff. So like I'll be like behind the camera and I'll be like doing my panning or whatever. And Sarah's just like, and then I'll be like cooking something and I'll be like, la la la. And then she'll be like, you forgot this. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so it just depends on the context. But yeah, it's funny to see all four of us because we are all four of us very opinionated and, you know, not afraid to speak up, to say the least. So it's just like if somebody's sort of like, you know, minding their own business, somebody else is just like, hey, what are you doing? And it just cycles, honestly, like from person to person. But I think that Sarah's definitely like very much like the big sister in my book.
I can tell.
And she's just
like you're the youngest. She's the oldest.
Yeah. Sarah corrals all of us. So the blog would not exist without her guiding hand.
Organized chaos. That's all.
Yeah,
that's all
exactly.
It is.
She's the organized. I'm the chaos. That's
there it is. I'm actually a happy medium on both.
See, that's how the middle child ends up. You're just like the sweet spot right in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. That's so funny because I feel like, at least with my relationship with my siblings, like throughout the years, it's so crazy how your relationships change and how your personalities come into your own. Mm-hmm. And even like going to college was a big deal because I was the first one to, you know, stay at college and leave. And I was the first one to go abroad and things like that. And then my older sister would be like, love to travel, but she did not go away to school. So it's like interesting how the dynamics, when you have the same parents, how you guys change. Mm-hmm. But in the same tune, we're all very similar. Like I can say the most niche television joke on the planet and no one else will understand it.
Right.
But them.
That's really, honestly, you can't put a voice on that.
For sure.
It's the best feeling.
It is. Just, I can't say the jokes outside of them because people will look at me like I'm crazy.
Well, what happens with me and Sarah is that something will be said in the vicinity and then like the thought will just occur to both of us at the same time. Then we'll just like look at each other and start like giggling and sniggering. And it's just like, everybody's like, what are you laughing at? And we're just like, season 5, episode 10 of Hey Arnold, look it up.
Like, yeah, that's so relatable. I was just, I was home for Thanksgiving and I was upgrading my phone. This is such a detour, but And me and my younger sister, we just have the craziest inside jokes. So the poor AT&T guy, he was just trying to upgrade our phones. And like a song came on. And then we both looked at each other and we started cracking up for like 20 minutes. And this guy was like, can I just please get a phone? Like, what are the girls doing? Are they
okay? So funny.
I'm like, I'm mature for my age. I understand you started this blog in 2013, so this has been over 10 years now. Sarah, you are right out of college,
yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, so I know a lot of people, especially when my friends were out of college too, like it can be such a struggle to find work. I know every single person can relate to that even now, no matter what age you are at.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents had moved to China also at that time. Walk me through how you went from not knowing what you're going to do or maybe having the bare bones idea to starting the blog.
Yeah. So I graduated from college in 2012 and my parents had moved to China in 2011. So basically like as I was starting my senior year, they left. And that was as Caitlin was starting her freshman year of college. So we were both in the U.S. On our own for a year in college. My sister for longer. Poor thing. but
went to a college close to home.
Yes. So yeah, in 2012, I mean, we were still sort of feeling the effects of like the 2008 financial crisis. It was really hard to find a job. I was just like going to job fairs and just feeling like downtrodden and like really just like, it was just really hard. And I was living at home. So I was living at my parents' house after I graduated by myself because the house was empty. And I was just like leading this bizarre, like as a 22-year-old, leading this bizarre like suburban life in the house that I grew up in, like going to the grocery store, like walking our dog, like trying to find a job. And like, you know, during the day, which felt like was a full-time job to find a job.
Right. You had all that freedom and then you're reverting
right.
back.
I've, yeah. And it was just like, oh man, like this sucks. and also just like, I was really isolated from people my own age. Like I was just like, I would see like our neighbors yes. like across and be like, hey, and we'd be chatting about like gardening or weeding or something. I'm like, what is happening? Like, what are we doing?
I'm age 30 years. Yeah. For this.
Yeah. So I guess in what eventually happened was Caitlin and I had been like sort of, we had started to consume like food blogging content probably in like the early right. 2010s. So we would like be like, oh, did you see like this post and or, like on Spin Kitchen or did you see that recipe or whatever? And so like food blogs were in our orbit. And then we also were like, it's really, we should really like try to like record these recipes that our parents had cooked for us growing up because we didn't have them. And when I would call my mom to like ask, I would ask her like, how do I make that braised pork belly? She'd be like, you just add some of this and some soy sauce and just, you know, boil it for a while until it like kind of looks like this. And then you do that. And it was just so vague. And like, I was just like, okay, I don't think I can cook off of that. Cause I was so used to working off of recipes at that point. Basically in a like state of just like boredom and like defeat, I was just like, okay, I need like something else to work on other than like job, like finding job fairs to not go to. Cause I would just be like, oh, this job fair. And then just not go. Cause they're just so depressing and horrible. I kind of just like asked my parents and Caitlin, I was like, should we start this? And my mom growing up had always been like, if you can't find a job, you give yourself a job. Like she was always like very sort of like entrepreneurial minded. Both my parents are entrepreneurial in their own ways. So they really encouraged me to sort of just like, yeah, just start it. Like gain some new skills, do this thing, and like we can see how it goes. Yeah. So I just like, I remember at that time, I actually got like, I had like clinical eye strain because I was literally staring at my computer for 20 hours a day because I was just like,
oh my gosh, I probably have that.
Yeah, because I was just like constantly like, I was like, how do you start a website? Like WordPress? What's that? Like, you know, and just like kind of in that early stage of just like being really excited about it and wanting to get it off the ground. And from the very beginning, all of us were involved. Like I would say that I was like sort of the driver behind like actually getting the domain up and running, getting the website up and running. But in terms of writing the content and the recipes, it was always all four of us.
Were your parents working at the time?
So yeah, my dad, the reason my parents moved to China was my dad had like a work assignment, a temporary work assignment in Beijing.
Okay.
My mom was kind of like semi-retired at the time. She had her own business, but she sort of was like, she closed it and was like, I don't want to do that anymore. So she was sort of just like living in China and just relaxing.
Living her life.
She was living large in Beijing.
As the lady of the house in Beijing, as we say. But yeah, so my parents were just like super on board with it. And then Caitlin from college, she also like contributed her, like, if you go back to like the really early days of the blog, you'll find recipes where it's like, the pictures are so janky. It's like from Caitlin's like college apartment. Like it's, yeah.
Yeah. There's,
it's time to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like our, like people are like, SEO consultants keep telling us like, oh, you should take those, like you should delete those, like no one looks at those, and we're just like, those are like, those
no,
are
those are the,
that's like the foundation, important history, like blog history that needs to stay there. So
I agree, that's like when you curate your Instagram posts and then you go so far back, it's like I don't want to delete them because that's
right,
like a baby, I want to look at them.
Yeah, those are formative times.
Mm-hmm. So, Caitlin, you were, I'm sure you were busy at the time. How were you managing school and then contributing? Were you just doing little by little?
Yeah, it was little by little, I would say. And I mean, to be honest, like there was a time where the blog like really got off the ground, at least from our personal, like how we were treating it standpoint. Like Sarah was like full-time, well, not full time, but like most of your free hours were spent on the blog.
Okay.
And so like in Beijing, they like, also Sarah didn't mention, but she ended up in Beijing as well, living with my parents. So she had like a internship and a job in Beijing.
Was that
for a nonprofit?
You were explaining. Sorry.
No. It was working for a nonprofit. So non food related. So The food thing was definitely like the side hustle for everybody.
Okay.
None of us worked in food. Yeah, so I would just, like, it was funny because, like, they were, like, in the center of, the capital of China, mm-hmm. like, surrounded by all this amazing food and this city and all different cuisines from across China. Like, you can eat, like, a lot of different, like, sort of, like, varieties of Chinese food in Beijing. And, like, they were getting exposed to all these new things and all these new techniques and ingredients and... So like they were really like cooking up a storm over there, and I was just like, oh, beep up, boop up, that was really good. I was like, I didn't
like
taste it.
Vacation without you, and it's the absolute worst.
Right. So I would go there for like spring break, summer break, things like that here and there. But the rest of the time, I was just like, hey, I'm gonna blog something. Like I'm gonna blog a recipe that is like something that I've been really liking lately, or you know, whatever it might be. And that was like kind of a unique experience because in Beijing there was more production. Like Sarah had her camera and like my parents were like, oh, fawning over the food. And with me, I was just like I was just like trying to get in there with like the spoon and then like with whatever the hell I was using. I think I was using an iPhone. What did I use, Sarah, back then?
I feel like you had a camera. I feel like we... Yeah, but
maybe
you didn't know how to
use it. I must have had a camera. I didn't know how to use it very well. No. Yeah, you're right. I did have a camera because on a spring break trip, I brought it to London and I have so many blurry photos of myself. It's pathetic.
Hey, those are in now. Those are in.
Yeah, it wasn't like grainy though. It was like blurry. It's like, oh, she don't know how to use this giant camera. That's so
funny. Well, it sounds like, you know, you fulfilled missing out of your Beijing experience by going back and
being
involved with the blog for so long now. And then you released a cookbook in 2022 around there. I was looking, it has over like 1,000 positive reviews on Amazon alone. It has incredible accolades. What were you guys expecting at the time? Were you expecting that kind of gratitude because your page had taken off? What was it like to have all those reactions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we hoped that the cookbook would be well received, but I think a big part of it was also like waiting a really long time to do the cookbook. You know, we had been around for like 9 years by the time we published it. And
well, I'm sure you had some loyal.
Yeah, by that time we had a lot of people asking for one. I think we were really, with the cookbook, we were really wanting just to sort of create like one, just to condense the spirit of the blog and the sort of approach that we take to the blog in a cookbook. So by that I mean, like, on the blog, we've always sort of been, I think, really inclusive in terms of like our approach to Chinese food and like all of the different entry points that we know people have to Chinese food. So for some people, it's like their memory of Chinese food is like Chinese takeout restaurants that they would order from growing up. Or for some people,
well, that's American
Chinese. So for So for some people, it's. You know, their parents cooking. For some people, they have actually gone to China and have, you know, eaten in China and experienced different regional cuisines. So I feel like for us, like, and that's that all of those different experiences of Chinese food are like wrapped up in our experience as well, right? Being Chinese American, growing up in a family with really good cooks, and then also having lived in China for a time.
And being in New Jersey, I'm sure you experienced it.
Yeah, for sure. And our grandfather also ran a Chinese takeout restaurant. So I feel like, so I feel like we have all of these different sort of like perspectives and like different facets of Chinese food covered. So like the really sort of regional and diverse cuisines that you'll find in China, we try to represent Chinese American cooking. We try to represent, you know, Cantonese home cooking that a lot of immigrant families are familiar with here in the US. We really wanted the book to sort of like be an encapsulation of that. And I think that a lot of people, so no matter what your experience of Chinese food is, I feel like you'll find something in that book to sort of like as to be like, oh, I know that dish and I want to learn how to make it. And then in the process, hopefully like browse through the rest of the book and then find something new that you haven't tried before. I think that people have responded to that. And I think it's also that having grown up using recipes and cookbooks extensively, I think that we took what like the blogs or what the blog has done and what we've been told by our readers they appreciate is that we've basically taken this like a little of this, a little of that approach that so many like parents and grandparents have taken to cooking and like applied like more rigorous sort of recipe testing to it and just given them like an easy to follow method so that they can actually achieve, you know, a dim sum item or like zongzi, which is like pretty complicated to make. Yeah, I think that people are just really excited to be able to make these dishes that either they grew up with or that they've only ever experienced at a restaurant.
Do you feel like because maybe a lot of people go to you as a resource for Chinese culture, and like you said, you were kind of a melting pot. I know.
I'm like, hold on. Let me just turn on the light. Okay.
I know it's probably so dark there already.
I didn't even.
It's like dark. Maybe. Yeah, it's just dark.
Looks good. I guess. I guess it like, is.
It's almost 4 or 5 o'clock for you guys. There, it's pitch black.
Yeah.
Anyways, because you were trying to represent so many different cuisines, did you feel pressure to kind of fit the mold of so many people?
I think there was definitely, well, There's always pressure in the world of food blogging to make what people want mm-hmm. and to know what people want. And I think that we luckily started out with a very clear goal, clear thesis statement for what we wanted to do, which is The Walks of Life is what we call a culinary genealogy, which is a very complex phrase, but essentially it's like our family's story and history as told in food. So the recipes that we grew up eating and loving, and the Chinese dishes and the non-Chinese dishes, and the sort of like diverse influences of everything that we love to eat all in one place. So happily, for most of the blog's existence, we've sort of gone by that. But there have been times where we've had to sort of like re-remind ourselves of like, hey, like we think this is great and we think this is cool. And a lot of the time people don't know about it, or there's like an education process mm-hmm. that has to come into play, especially with ingredients, where it's just like, hey, look, we know that you might be tangentially aware of this or not at all aware of this, but, you know, this oyster sauce or dark soy sauce or, you know, Shaoxing wine, whatever it is like, here's why you should know what it is. And just kind of realizing that we had a dual role in the kind of content that we were making, which is, yes, there was a wide variety of people that we were wanting to like help and like make their kitchen adventures more fruitful, but also that we had to kind of like pave the way for ourselves, like as we went along, to say like, okay, like we must create a platform for ourselves to kind of like level people up to even more, you know, interesting or complex or unfamiliar, even just unfamiliar dishes. So I think a great example that's been on my mind lately, because we just did a whole new YouTube video for it, okay. is our chili oil recipe.
Oh, yum.
Which okay. back in the day,
that's a big we released.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in 2015, chili oil was not a big thing. Mm-hmm. And we had started really loving chili oil. We grew up eating like the chunkier version of sriracha. I think the proof point
that
like
chili oil wasn't a big thing in 2015 is that if you search chili oil, the number one result was Giada De Laurentiis's like Italian chili oil recipe.
Yes, yeah. It was her Italian chili oil, and it had two ingredients, extra virgin olive oil and Italian crushed red pepper flakes, yes. which – I made that recipe, and the Italian chili flakes that are available at the grocery store are not up to snuff. It has very little flavor, I'm sad to report.
Mm-hmm. And not a good chef, though. I'm not surprised by that.
Right. I mean, it's mostly the grocery store's right. fault and like what we have access to. Right. But yeah, I mean, that was an ingredient where we were starting to love it from like our travels in China. And I would say in terms of what you could get in America as like even a Chinese family, it was more limited to like a sriracha type or like a chili garlic sauce, which is delicious, but it's not similar to chili oil. They're not the same. They're both spicy. That's where the similarities kind of end. So we were like, oh, well, we should post a recipe for this chili oil because now we've discovered how to make it. And isn't it incredible that we've done – you know, made chili oil in our home kitchen that we're eating at all these like noodle houses in Beijing and all these sort of like dumpling spots and, you know, in China, these like, these like traditional chili oil havens, I guess. And when we first posted that recipe, it just slowly chugged along. And over time, it became like a hit recipe on the blog, and people were just like, oh my god, like I made this chili oil. And like at my job, like I would have coworkers of mine being like, oh hey, like I saw somebody that like a friend of mine who like doesn't even know you made your chili oil. And like it just became, I feel like people love spicy food in general, like hot ones is a thing, and like hot sauces in general, like started to get more popularity, but chili oil in particular, like we did not realize like how popular that was going to be, but we knew that we wanted to shine a light on it as an ingredient, as a condiment, and just like get people talking about it more. And, you know, we weren't the ones who were like making our own brand of chili oil, but we were the people who were saying like, hey, you can make this at home, actually. Isn't that incredible? And kind of just like introducing people to the idea of like drizzling chili oil over your dumplings or your fried rice or whatever it is. Things that had been happening, obviously, if you were like a Chinese family or in the know, like traveled to China, et cetera, et cetera. But like if you were just sort of like an average Joe kind of home cook in America, you were probably like, oh, what? I'm making Giada De Laurentiis's chili oil. I don't know what Chinese chili oil is, you know? So that's like that was one where we really kind of saw in real time over the years of like, hey, like the more we talk about something, the more comfortable that people feel with it. And then other people start to run with it in their own ways. And then suddenly you've got this like chili oil phenomenon, chili crisp in particular, having a lot of popularity. And one of the original chili crisp brands, it's like the most popular in the world, is Lao Ganma. And it's like the jar with like the lady, the like very stern lady on it. And like that was another sauce where it was just like, let's talk about this ingredient because we love it so much. And like back, one of our earliest recipes was
the earliest recipe. Well, the first recipe was simple spicy pan fried noodles. And we talked about Lao Ganma in it. Oh, yeah.
Right. So we were using it as like a condiment for like me and Sarah after school would like make pan fried noodles ourselves, which was like you blanch the noodles. You drain them, you pan fry them in a skillet. It's a very minimal effort on the part of like a latchkey kid at home. Don't report our parents. We were cooking by ourselves after school. And
so many people on here that are like, I use the oven at 7.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, kids can do more than you think. But yeah, and then we would like toss it with soy sauce and sesame oil and white pepper and this Lao Ganma chili oil. And we were just like, okay, is anybody really talking about this? Because like, we just love it so much. Like we couldn't like contain ourselves. We were like, let's talk about it. Let's make a blog post about it. Like, let's put it in our recipes. And, you know, I would say the day that I saw, this was a few years ago too. It wasn't even that recent.
That is pretty recent though, still for it, not the unawareness to be there about the staple ingredient.
Totally. But like I would say 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I saw Lao Ganma at ShopRite. It was a ShopRite in like Nutley, New Jersey or something. And I was just like, whoa. I was like, we've infiltrated the castle. this is awesome. So yeah, that's a very long-winded story, but yeah. You know, I think over the years we were like, okay, there are things that we're excited about and that we want to build on, but like now that people have an understanding of chili oil, it's like, okay, take that chili oil, take a quarter cup of it and put it in your mapo tofu that you're making at home. Now we're going somewhere. It's not just like, yes, drizzle over your dumplings. Anybody can do that. Hate to say. But, you know, now if you're leveling up, quote unquote, you can make even more complicated, I don't want to say complicated for the sake of complicated, but like complexly flavored dishes that are building people's confidence even more in the kind of food that they can cook at home and just making people excited about what they can do on their own outside of a restaurant setting or what might be in their normal wheelhouse.
Right. There's just so many steps that you have to go through from unawareness, just because, you know, maybe they're not surrounded by whatever culture you grow up in or ethnicity, to bringing it into your daily lives. It takes a lot of time to get that word out. So if you're just knowing about chili oil, now that we have that understanding and that baseline, now it's like, okay, we can go step by step and then teach them maybe about another dish and then do this. You know,
totally.
Exactly. But it just takes so much time. And because there was such a lack of representation even 10 years ago, it now is probably starting to infiltrate everyone's lives, especially in New Jersey too. That's a wild one.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about Chinese New Year, though, because I know it's coming up. I know the gist of it, but I didn't want to dig too deep into it because I kind of wanted to learn a little bit from you guys. Could you tell me about the holiday? Maybe explain it to people who don't necessarily totally know what you guys do or celebrate, and then how you plan on celebrating in terms of food.
Yeah, so Chinese New Year or Lunar New Year, which is a little bit more inclusive of all of the countries and cultures that celebrate it. The biggest holiday, it's the biggest Chinese holiday of the year. It's actually in China, it's a 2-week long celebration. So it's actually 15 days.
That sounds very fun and very exhausting.
Yeah, it's also called Spring Festival. It's sort of this time, you're celebrating this time of like renewal, right? It's just like, okay, like clean slate, fresh start. A lot of the holiday sort of like symbolism and the sort of like sentiment behind it is this desire to like ring in prosperity, wealth, good health, like, you know, wishing you all of these good things for the coming new year. So I think that it's also like the biggest, I think it's some like crazy statistic, but like it's like every year like the biggest mass migration of people happens or something during Chinese New Year, because all of the sort of big cities in China empty, and then like the people just like all like flood into their back to their home villages and all the like smaller towns and cities where they came from to see their families, because of like, you know, that's why it sort of does make sense that it's like it takes place over a couple of weeks. A lot of times this is like the only time of year that people go home. A lot of the food, a lot of the traditions have to do with that sort of like bringing of good luck and wealth and prosperity. I mean, it's really all about money for Chinese people. Like it's just like, yeah,
I was gonna say, it's just like good fortune. How many ways can we say good fortune and money and like
prosperity,
good fortune, gold bars?
It's all hidden, and you just
yeah. I mean, like, you know, you're giving. So some of the traditions associated with it are like, you know, kids like are supposed to receive like red envelopes of lucky money. You know, the food's on the table, like spring rolls, they look like little gold bars, or dumplings look like little gold ingots. And, you know, you're supposed to eat like, so on the night before, a lot of it has to do with these sort of like Chinese idioms and homonyms in Chinese. So what a lot of people don't know about like the Chinese language is that it's a tonal language. So you can say the same sort of like syllables in a slightly different like tone, and it means something completely different.
That's similar to Italian. It's like all throughout the country, the accent changes.
And yeah.
The
same word. You're hearing something totally
different. So in this case, it's like, okay, so that there will be like all these like homonyms in Chinese where like, oh, this word sounds like this. So like, for example, like niangao is like a Chinese like sweet rice cake, but the words niangao also sort of sound like higher year, or like you're gonna be like elevated in like the next year. So like you'll make these things to be like, okay, I want you to like, you know, prosper next year, kind of thing, or this upcoming year.
Do you both speak fluent?
No. No. I wish so hard that we did. I mean, growing up, we didn't speak Chinese almost at all. So I grew up mostly with like around our Cantonese grandparents. So like apparently Cantonese was my first language, is what I was told.
Okay. Then you're bilingual. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, so what happened was like then you end up in school, you end up in kindergarten. The kindergarten teacher calls your parents and is like, your daughter isn't speaking English in class, so you need to speak English at home. And that
we were victims of assimilation.
Yeah. So, but eventually Caitlin and I both studied Chinese in college, and then I lived in China. So like, I feel like my Chinese is like passable. Like I can like get around. Okay. Not fluent though, sadly. But our mom is fluent in three dialects. Our dad is fluent in Cantonese and I Amazing. Mean like Mandarin, he's pretty good. I don't know that I would say he's fluent in Mandarin, but he's like pretty good.
And well, he also speaks Spanish and English. So we're really pulling below our weight. Like, it is not, we're not living up to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think my mom, like, I admire her so much for being, like, she grew up speaking Mandarin and Shanghainese, and then she, like, marries into a Cantonese family and just learns Cantonese. And she can just speak Cantonese.
I don't understand people that do that. I am so jealous. Like, I literally look at a foreign language, and it'll take me 5 years to just learn a sentence. Like, I just can't learn like that.
especially when you have multiple languages in your head. Like when I transitioned. Yeah. So in high school, I learned Spanish. And then I started learning Chinese in college. And, like, when I would, like, go to speak. So we went to... like my junior year of college, we went on a family vacation to Spain, and I was trying to ask these ladies if their chair was free. Like, oh, can I take this chair? And all that would come out of my mouth was Chinese, and they would look so confused. Like, why are you trying to speak to us in Chinese? And the Spanish had been totally like replaced by like as like second language. Like, I was like, I only have room for English and one other thing.
I do. Yeah. My friend said a sentence to me in Spanish, and I responded in Italian. And I was like, I don't even know what
you're saying anymore. Just your brain's just like, quick, foreign language, take anything.
Something. I'm like, I can barely even speak English that well. I can barely form my thoughts sometimes. So I'm like, you know what? Everyone who can speak it, I've given props.
For sure. Yes. It's a talent.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. What? Okay, wait, actually continue what you were saying, because we definitely got off track.
Yeah, no. Right. So Chinese New Year is just this like time to get together with your family to make this really big dinner. So on like the biggest sort of night is the New Year's Eve, when you have this like big New Year's Eve dinner. That's when you're going to see a lot of those like symbolic dishes on the table. Yeah. And there's also all these sorts of traditions that are like, don't, like, after the New Year has begun, you can't, like, wash your hair. You can't sweep the house or vacuum. You can't, like, because you don't want to, like, sweep out all of the sort of, like, good luck that you're, like, if you, like.
Yeah, you're supposed to do all that before. Well before, like, the 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks before the New Year's Eve.
Honestly, I already barely wash my hair, so that sounds
so yeah, it's there are a lot of these sort of crazy like traditions and superstitions involved, and then you have like the Chinese zodiac thing. So like the Chinese calendar, or like the zodiac calendar, is like in this 12-year cycle, so there are all these animals. And so this upcoming year is the year of the snake, I think. And then each year like is supposed to bring its own thing, depending on what your zodiac sign is. And there are these many Chinese fortune tellers, and like, I don't know, that's its own like genre of
there's a lot of, I mean, the horoscope girlies would go nuts for the level of scrutiny on the animal zodiac. But in case anybody was wondering and got excited, if they're a snake, the year your animal year is actually like, you have to be careful. Oh. You're not lucky during your year. You actually have to be extra careful because you might be unlucky during your animal year. So
whole year?
Yeah, that's why there's workarounds. People will wear red underwear like all year round, or like wear like a little red bracelet or something lucky to like help them
counterbalance the bad luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. See, I love a good horoscope when it's tilted in my favor, but when it's not.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
There's some weeks where it's like, you really need to pay attention and like, you know, be stingy on your money. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to.
I'm like, this is all nonsense. I don't even know why I read this.
I would love to know. Okay. because I know a lot of Chinese dishes just from talking to people on these podcasts, but I always just like to ask what you guys are cooking up. So let's pretend you're on Top Chef, Iron Chef, I don't know. What are you going to make? What Chinese dish with just 5 ingredients or less?
Okay, 5 ingredients or less. That's tough. Because Chinese...
I know mine.
Okay, I know they're a little expensive, so I didn't know if 5 was too little, but...
Well,
5 is very little, but
you can get away with it. I mean, I think you can make a Cantonese poached chicken with 5 ingredients or less. A Cantonese poached chicken is also like a really like classic sort of dish that shows up at celebrations. So it is relevant for the Chinese New Year thing as well. But it's basically you take a whole chicken, so head and feet on. It has to be just the whole bird. And you poach it for really not as long as you would think. It's like about an hour. And then...
With ginger and scallion. Yeah.
And then you're going to like put it into an ice bath to cool it down. So this cools it down. And then also like it sort of changes the texture of the skin on the chicken. So it makes it sort of like snappy is how
more enjoyable.
Like it has this like sort of al dente bite. Like the skin is an important part of the experience. Okay. And then you make a ginger scallion sauce. So it's literally just raw ginger, raw scallion, and salt and oil. It just complements the chicken. It's really like this sort of like pure distillation of like chicken is what that dish is. It's a Cantonese preparation, and in a lot of Cantonese cooking, you'll see that sort of like a very delicate approach to the ingredient, like not wanting to overpower the ingredient, but really like help that main ingredient like shine to its or like elevate it to its like highest potential. That's what I think of when I think of Cantonese poached chicken. It's very, very simple, but really, really delicious. And if you've ever heard of like like Hainan chicken rice, which was really popularized in Singapore, that's the chicken. It's like this very simple poaching, and then that sauce. In the Hainan version or the Singaporean version, you also have like a sweet soy sauce that goes with it, and then like this chili sauce that goes with it. I think that one, that's like a really sort of simple dish that showcases Cantonese technique.
Yeah.
I've got another one. So that's my dad's side of the fence. From my mom's side of the fence is a Shanghainese braised pork belly.
Oh, pork belly is so very big actually, right now too as well.
Yes. Again, another ingredient nobody gave a hoot about pork belly back when we were starting, and now there are a lot of pork belly at Costco. There are a lot of hoots, and we've kind of cultivated our own demise because pork belly is so expensive now. My mom always laments. She's like, "Oh, it used to be
so cheap." Yeah, that's sometimes why I gatekeep things.
So I'm kind of counting in real time, but it's pork belly, dark soy sauce, light soy sauce, rock sugar, and cooking wine. That's like the core. But there's like, and that, you know, it's really all about like the order in which you add the ingredients and how you treat them. So the rock sugar gets melted in oil, and then the pork belly pieces get blanched and then drained, and then they get browned in the sort of like oily rock sugar mixture. And that makes a huge difference. So it's like, you know, browning is always going to get you to a different place, but browning it in like this like sugary oil mixture is like next level.
Anything with sugar automatically tastes good. So
Exactly. And then you add, it's that primal urge. And then you add the light and dark soy sauce, and you braise it, and the wine, the Shaoxing cooking wine. And then you braise it like kind of like at a low simmer. And then the sugar breaks down, the pork belly gets tender. And then like you end up with this like very glossy sauce. And it's like one of the most it's one of the most iconic Chinese dishes, and everybody has their own version and their own take. And there are different versions of it. There's one that's a little bit spicier. You could have it with hard boiled eggs. You could have a version with like squid thrown in. Like it's very much sort of like the bread and butter of what we grew up eating. And come to think of it, is just about five ingredients.
Good job, guys. I told Sarah before this, I didn't eat lunch, so I need to stop talking about this. So let's talk about what's next for you. Do you have any upcoming projects, anything else going on that you'd like to talk about? Maybe a cookbook in the works, a second one?
Yeah, we'll see. No official second cookbook in the works yet. We're considering it. A cookbook is a lot of work.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but we, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, we're working on our YouTube channel. So if whoever is listening, head over to our YouTube channel and check out some of our videos, because
at the Walk of Life, is that what it is?
It's at the Walks of Life 1. I don't know why I don't know why, but I did need to add the 1 at the time. And yeah, we're just kind of doing like an old school cooking video kind of a thing, and it's been very fun to. It's been fun and challenging to get in front of the camera instead of just being behind the camera all the time. And I think that we're sort of, most of my growing pains on video editing and camera work are hopefully behind me.
It's also
Yeah, it is a lot. But yeah, I think it's just, it's a fun and different way to interact with us. If you've been reading the blog for a long time, or if you've never read the blog and don't know who we are, I think the goal is to say, like, just to reach a different kind of cook who, you know, wants to see things play out. I think a lot of people are like that, where it's like, show me what you're doing. Like, I got to see it with my own two eyes. Mm-hmm. Like, not everybody prefers reading. I mean, there are people who still are just like, where's the recipe? Go away. I don't want to hear from you.
Put it in the caption. It's like the entire recipe. They go, where's the recipe? I'm like,
I know. They're like, no ingredients, no measurements. I'm like, there is a link with a beautiful array of images and detailed instructions for you. But yeah, that's kind of been... I think we're just, the cookbook in 2022 was so amazing, and there was such a awesome response to it, and it was really amazing to meet like our readers in real life after so many years of doing what we've been doing. But now we're kind of just like, we're going back to the core, just making sure that the blog has always got like new and exciting and cool stuff on it. Cause when the book was being written and promoted, we kept up a regular cadence of new recipes, which a lot of our peers, you know, they you know, will pause or sort of reduce, and it's completely
behind you. It's like four of
you, right? Exactly. But and it's a completely reasonable thing to do, because it is just so much work to put out a cookbook. And you know, I think like when we were doing that, it was like, okay, let's do our best to like keep up a steady stream, because we knew that we just wanted to make sure that we were like keeping everything afloat. So now that there isn't a second cookbook on the horizon, at least not yet, I think we're just
you've got your YouTube
channel. we're enjoying our sort of our home base.
I was telling Olivia before we started that it just had a baby, so that's part of it.
Oh yeah, that's you, Sarah, and me. Right.
He knows me before we started. Yeah, that's a thing. Well, congratulations times two. Focus on that. All right, so I have kind of a fun question. My sister had asked me this a few weeks ago, and I feel like you guys are fun enough to ask it. sometimes it depends, you know, you never know. okay, what would be your death row meal? And it would be three courses.
Oh, three courses. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, so my my answer, I have this answer ready to go because I've done this thought experiment before. But so my like my death row meal is, it's actually not coursed, but it is like a Cantonese, it's like a family dish. Style Chinese family style meal. And it's Cantonese because I'm sorry to my mom's Shanghainese side of the family, but I do feel like more, like I love Cantonese food more. Salt and pepper pork chops. A, like some kind of braised tofu, which I think, I think a lot of people listening would be like tofu, but I love tofu so much. And then like a very, very well done, like well executed, like with lots of wok hay, stir fried vegetable with rice. That's it. It's just like,
what about dessert?
Not a huge dessert person. I'm always savory over.
If you're on death row, you're gonna say.
But I feel like I feel like I got my three courses and my three dishes.
Okay, I would have a giant. Okay, my dessert would be a sticky toffee pudding with ice cream. So I would say my answer is very similar to Sarah's. The appetizer would be chicken fingers and French fries. And the dessert would be a sticky toffee pudding with ice cream.
Okay.
And then, yeah, in the middle, the Cantonese spread. Because, yeah, I love, I don't know. I was that kid growing up who was like, maybe I'll order something else. And was like, nope, chicken fingers and French fries. Thank you.
See, I'm such like a mood-based person. So whatever mood I'm feeling that day is probably not actually, if I'm on death row, I'll probably be in an upset mood. So.
Yeah. You're gonna be like, I'm not hungry.
Yeah, I think I'm a little sad, but we'll see. Well, I'm Italian, so I'll do anything pasta probably, but there is this restaurant in New York that we always go to, and they have the craziest like mozzarella stick kind of things. It's fried mozzarella, but it's shaped like a triangle.
Yes,
that would be my appetizer. So good. No doubt.
Which restaurant is it?
It's called Tony DiNapoli's. It's in Midtown, so it's honestly, I feel like it's kind of touristy because it's in
the Midtown, it's in like a theater district, right? I think I have been there.
Yeah, but also, I don't know why we just like it so much, and there's so many Italian places. But I'm a creature of habit, so I'll go back to the places.
Yes, for sure. I mean, those places are really like when you just like when somebody puts a huge platter of pasta in front of you. There's just like, I love this.
Yeah, no, it's family style. So that's probably why we go too, because we all eat a ton of
food. Yeah.
And then I think for my main meal, I would probably have some sort of pasta. I don't know, maybe a milkshake. That would probably curb the emotional sadness. Mm. and then dessert, we got to go ice cream. I'm an ice cream person.
So. Yes. See, I'm an ice cream girl too.
Yeah.
Like, I love ice cream.
Honestly, any chocolate, maybe a lava cake, like one that like oozes with all the chocolate when you open it, like that perfect. You're a food stylist, you know the shot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. This was a total blast. Taking time away from your baby too, which is so nice.
It was nice for me too to take time away.
Yes, Sarah's
like, you can come on anytime, even if I'm not here. You could just text me like, Sarah's on. all right, so you can keep up with Sarah and Caitlin on Instagram at The Walks of Life and their YouTube at The Walks of Life 1.
Hey, fellow foodies, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.